celery, avocado, plain pasta, junk food. Besides being the oddest grocery list my three-year-old could make for this week's Wegmans run, these food items made the list for a reason. Remember these four: celery, avocado, plain pasta, and junk food, because they'll serve to keep today's podcast digestible. See what I did there? Hi again, and welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Danielle Rudes, and this is the next installment of the ACIT podcast in our Evidence-Based Practices and Corrections series. As consumers of just about anything and everything stores have to offer, you know that the one-size-fits-all tag does not fit all. Not all grocery stores are created equal. Have you seen the potato chip aisle at Safeway? Abysmal. However, the bakery items in Wegmans, sublime. So, as consumers, if you know where you're going to get what you need because that place has the thing that suits you best, then maybe the type of logic, or that type of logic, is translatable for, I don't know, let's say, offenders. You know, there are many tools out there crafted to assess risk and needs of individuals, but there are still many unanswered questions about what matters most when making decisions about how to best supervise people on probation or parole. Researchers, like the ones we'll talk about today, point out that the same generic programming might not be appropriate for all offenders. Yeah, well, the last big and tall one-size-fits-all shirt that I bought as a gift for someone was neither big nor tall. People come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their risks and needs. Think about your grocery list. When you rush to one grocery store to pick up fruit, and then you go to a whole different grocery store to pick up meat, you're selecting products and services that are tailored to you and your tastes. Remember, not all grocery stores are created equal. Similarly, not all programming for offenders is created equal, and not all programming is suitable for all people. When it comes to risk and need assessments, we can all agree that needs matter. But it is unclear just how they matter. And by how, I mean, how do needs influence recidivism? Something I know we all care about. Well, our own Faye Taxman of George Mason University and her colleague Michael Cotty of the University of Texas San Antonio provide a first glimpse at understanding how needs matter. Their study published last year, 2015, in a journal called Criminology and Public Policy, is titled Risk Tells Us Who, But Not What or How: Empirical Assessment of the Complexity of Criminogenic Needs to Inform Correctional Programming. Well, why do academics insist on such long titles? They might as well just call their piece What Works for Whom? Helping Correctional Staff Be Better Matchmakers. So matchmaking, then, is the last slice of the risk-need-responsivity pie, and one that is not studied very often. Correctional staff can increase their chances of making a good match, that is, connecting offenders with resources that specifically target their problems, through the use of instruments that are both reliable and valid. But static risk factors alone can't tell staff much about offenders' needs. Relying on risk oversimplifies the complexities of individuals. In other words, there's a lot more to individuals than simply their risk score. Instruments considering needs help staff unpack these complexities, the complexities involved in each individual case, and they give staff directions about how to best play matchmaker, finding the right services for specific offenders. But what if needs group together in different ways for different people? And are these different groups of needs related at all to risk? And how and in what ways does this matter for, let's say, predicting recidivism? This brings us back to the Taxman and Cotty piece. In this piece, they argue that determining what works and for whom remains unsolved or an unresolved question. To help fill the gap, they divide a sample of 17,000 offenders, probationers, in North Carolina into smaller groups, based first on their needs and then based on something called destabilizers, and I'll get to that in just a second, then finally based on their risk, and we'll talk about risk a little bit later. To determine if offenders grouped together based on needs and destabilizers, and here destabilizers are really just things in offenders' lives that can kind of mess them up, like, for example, homelessness. Taxman and Cotty use something called a latent class analysis, or LCA. This is simply a fancy way of assessing clusters and understanding how different things, or in this case, different people, group together. A total of four groups emerged in their latent class analysis. Each group is labeled with two measures. First, is the probability of having one or a combination of primary criminogenic needs, you know, like substance abuse, criminal peers, antisocial personality, antisocial values, or low self-control. Then, the second measure is the probability of having a, or a combination of, destabilizers. Now, these are more tangible, dynamic needs that might need to get addressed first. Things like housing, as I mentioned before, also employment, education, family, financial needs, mental health. So for every group, there's basically two camps. Camp one is offender need, and camp two is offender destabilizers. And each of those things, needs and destabilizers, are measured as high, medium, or low. Okay, let me just sum it up for you quickly. We have one group, and this group consists of offenders with moderate needs and high destabilizers. Second group, low needs, low destabilizers. Third group, high needs, and, oh, wait a minute. Well, let me go back to something that I did in the beginning, and maybe it'll make it more clear. Remember that list I gave you at the beginning? You know, the food? Yeah, well, it wasn't just a grocery list, but it was actually a way to name these groups to help us keep them all straight. Let me do this sort of food thing for you and see if it makes the article any clearer. We're going to talk about group one as the celery group. This group has low needs and a low presence of destabilizers. Kind of like celery. It's a low-calorie, low-fat food. Low. It also has a low presence of taste. I mean, basically has no taste whatsoever, but I digress. So this group anyway, the low group, we're going to call celery. Another group is like an avocado. They have moderate needs and high destabilizers, like avocados that are moderately caloric, but pretty high in fat. Sure, it's a good fat, but fat nonetheless. So the avocado group is moderate need, high destabilizer. Do you remember the third item on the list? Yeah, plain pasta. And when I say plain, I mean plain. No butter, no seasoning. That's because this group is high in calories and moderate in fat. So you're putting it together? This group is high needs, moderate destabilizers. Finally, the last group refers to the aisle that you don't want to walk down when you're hungry, but I spend a lot of time in. You guessed it, junk food. This group, junk food, is high calorie, high fat. So in the offender sense, we're talking about high needs and high destabilizers. So now we've got a weird picnic basket filled with food, well, all filled with varying low, moderate, and high calories and fats, or in our case, needs and destabilizers. And now what does it mean? In each of these groups are offenders ranging in risk from high to low. Stay with me, I know it's a lot. Which means there are some high-risk offenders in the celery group. That's the low group. Low needs, low destabilizers, but there could still be some high-risk folk in there. And we have some low-risk offenders in the high group, the junk food group. High-risk, high destabilizers, they could still be low-risk. Now, Taxman and Cotty knew the four groups. They figured them out. The next step was that they wanted to see how these groups related to recidivism. Is your likelihood of recidivating greater or less in any one of these groups? And this, again, is recidivism not based on necessarily risk or risk alone, but recidivism based on the presence or absence and the level of destabilizers and needs. So Taxman and Cotty measure recidivism in all three ways in this article, based on arrest, based on new convictions, and based on incarceration during a two-year follow-up period, and they found several really cool things. First, they found probationers in the junk food group, which is high need, high destabilizer, and the pasta group, high need, moderate destabilizer groups, were more likely than their counterparts hanging out with avocado, moderate needs, high destabilizers, and celery, low needs, low destabilizers, to recidivate. On every measure of recidivism used, this was true. Again, let me say it again. They found probationers in the high needs, high destabilizers, and the high-needs moderate destabilizer groups were more likely than their counterparts to recidivate. They were more likely to be arrested, they were more likely to receive new convictions, and they were more likely to receive recommitment. Second, Taxman and Cotty find that low-risk probationers in the plain pasta and junk food groups, those are the groups that are considered to have high needs, actually recidivate more than the low-risk probationers of celery and avocado with low and moderate needs. I know it's a lot to process, but this is important. This means that despite the predictive validity of risk, adding needs as a part of the process improves prediction. Needs contribute much more to the story of potential reoffending. It's okay. Go ahead and say it. I knew it. So what does this tell us? The concept of risk helps us identify who requires more structure, while the concept of needs tells us how to structure it. I don't know about you, but that kind of blows my mind. Since a lot of programming is considered generic or reserved for only high-risk offenders, relying on a more comprehensive assessment that accounts for all of this messiness in our picnic basket has to offer can help staff be better matchmakers. We have a high-risk offender, but low on needs and low on destabilizers. Is he or she in greater need of programming than low-risk offender with high needs and high destabilizers? And what do you do with these cases? Well, these findings, Taxman and Cotty's findings, support the use of differential intervention. This concept goes back to those crisscrossing grocery shopping trips that you might do where you go to one store for fruit and the other one for meat. When you do that, you're using different grocery stores or different interventions to match your needs. So what Taxman and Cotty challenge us to do is better understand our offenders' needs and how certain needs might group together. That way, when we send them to the grocery store, or in our case, a program, we aren't just sending them to anyone. We're not giving them a generic one-size-fits-all recommendation. Instead, we're sending them to the store, or in our case, the program, that will best benefit their specific needs. And we aren't just sending everyone to this place based on their risk. Rather, we're sending them based on the prevalence of their need and the availability of resources that meet that need in a particular program. Think about it. If you're trying to stay healthy, you don't just go to the store and buy any old food. You look at the nutritional label, you look at the calories and the fat, you look for freshness and quality, and you try to make more informed decisions about what to buy. Making informed supervision recommendations is a lot like grocery shopping for healthy food. You can't just consider your risk of hunger. You also have to consider a whole slew of other details. I know, it all seems messy and complicated. And have you seen those charts in the article? Oof. But what Taxman and Cotty do is that they discuss something you and your agency are already talking about at the ground level. What do we do with those offenders, or in your case, probationers or prisoners, who are deemed low risk but high needs, especially when the presence of their needs greatly contributes to their risk of recidivism? We don't have all the answers, but the Taxman and Cotty study paves the way to understanding more about the problem and what can be done. It reminds us that not all food is created equal, and not all offenders are the same. Thanks for listening to this version of the podcast. I'll be back with another one really soon.